It's because he wants to be like the alpha male all the time. And then when he gets around Spider-Man, he's like, no, no.
Well, that's fair. I guess I can relate.
Yeah, that's why I host this podcast.
Technically, this week, I'm the host of the podcast, so you guys are all my betas. Welcome back, everyone, and thank you for joining us. This is Radioactive Spider Pod, the podcast that looks back on the 90s Spider-Man cartoon and asks, why can't crime bosses just accept their mortality? I'm your host for today, the Vulturine Vero Taylor, and circling the skies with me are my fine feathered friends, the plumed Peter Iskander.
That's right, I am plummeting to what? Not literacy. Plumed and plummeting, or whatever.
Oh, I didn't really get it.
Womp womp ba da da bum. And the migratory Kevin McAvoy.
I just flew into town and boy are my arms tired.
Oh!
All right, before we get into it, check out our social media for screenshots, updates, and all that good stuff. We're at RA Spider Pod on Twitter and at Radioactive Spider Pod on Facebook and Instagram. And all the links are available on our website, radioactivespiderpod.com. Also, if you want to help us even more, think about supporting us on Patreon. You'll get access to exclusive content and some other fun surprises. A shout out to our new patron, the altruistic Adam, who's rocking a brock all day long. So if you want to join this exclusive club, check us out at patreon.com/radioactivespiderpod. Whew, all that squawking has got me thirsty. So what's on tap for everyone today?
I am drinking a Muskoka Detour. It is quite sessionable.
Oh, it's off the beaten path, I hear.
Muskoka, give us free stuff.
I have a keg deals and kickbacks from Blood Brothers Brewing.
Oh, nice.
I have a batch 1904 cider because I'm getting prepared for Radioactive Cider Pod.
Nice. Well, it looks like we're all fueled up, so let's take wing and watch for Birds of Prey because we're descending on Neogenic Nightmare, Chapter 13, The Shriek of the Vulture. The Shriek of the Vulture first aired February 17th of 1996 and is based on The Amazing Spider-Man issues 2 and 386, which means it's time for another high-flying edition of Peter's Comic Book Minute.
Peter's Comic Book Minute.
Amazing Spider-Man number 2 was released on May 2nd, 2014 and starred Andrew Garfield as Peter Parker, reprising his role from Amazing Spider-Man number 1 from 2012. Oh, wait a second. I seem to have my notes mixed up here. Ah, here it is. No?
It's nothing? The movie.
Fuck you guys. Amazing Spider-Man number 2 was released May 10th, 1963 and was written by Stan Lee and illustrated by Steve Ditko. There are actually two villains in this comic. The first one is the Vulture and the second one is the Tinkerer, which is actually pretty cool because in Spider-Man Homecoming, Vulture and Tinkerer were together as well. The Vulture story is called Duel to the Death with the Vulture. The Vulture is going around stealing things, and he's planning heists. So he plans one where he tricks a bunch of people, and then Spider-Man finds out his secret to silent flight and makes an anti-magnetism gadget to counteract the one that the Vulture uses, and thus foils the Vulture.
It's just a positive and a negative that line up with his negative and his positive.
I'm positive that's an idiotic plan.
And in Amazing Spider-Man number 386, it's a lot more like this story in the episode. It was released on February 10th, 1994, and was written by David Michelinie and art by Mark Bagley. In that story called The Wings of Age, we find Peter going and talking to Dr. Benita Sanchez about a juvenator device and how it can affect human aging because Peter is worried about Aunt May and how she's finally starting to show her age.
Oh my God.
So Dr. Sanchez explains that it needs a life force of one person to be transferred to another. So it's kind of unethical and they're trying to find an artificial source. Anyway, so the Vulture tries to steal it. He's interrupted by Spider-Man. The Vulture tries to use it to steal Dr. Sanchez's life force, but Spider-Man knocks him aside. Spidey gets distracted and the Vulture goes and tries to take Spider-Man's life force. So it's a lot more similar to this episode. A lot happened.
A lot's going to happen in our story too, which starts with a board meeting at the Tombs Aerodynamic, where Norman Osborn makes fun of the elderly founder and CEO for attending by phone before offering to absorb the company into Oscorp. Adrian Toomes is having none of that and leaves everyone hanging when he flies off from his home in a metal bird suit. For real.
We haven't seen Storm and Norman in a while.
Yeah, he's back. He's being a titan of industry. I guess he's got his money again, somehow.
How the hell is Osborn supposed to pay for another company?
I guess they're glossing over it, so I guess we're going to gloss over it.
Yeah, that's fair.
Nothing else to be done here.
The Kingpin got bored.
Yeah.
And was like, here you go. Vanessa got it in the divorce, so she gave it back to him.
Nice. I found it really weird that it was called Toomes Aerodynamic instead of Aerodynamics. I don't know why, but it really bothered me, and I wrote all of my notes assuming that they had spelled it incorrectly on the sign, but they're consistent with it, so fuck me, I guess.
Gentlemen of the board, let me buy Toomes Aerodynamic, fold it into Oscorp, and make a greater profit.
Maybe it's foreshadowing for him. He was like, one day I'll be aerodynamic.
That's why he's so fucking smooth on top.
Yeah.
Old Adrian Toomes, which will come into play in a minute, is played by Eddie Albert, who is a veteran of the small and large screen and was nominated for 2 Academy Awards for Roman Holiday and Heartbreak Kid, and is best known for being on Green Acres. And interestingly, his son, Edward Albert, will also be on this show when he shows up next season as Matt Murdock / the Daredevil.
Oh,
kind of cool.
That was cool. So as the Vulture is listening to Norman Osborn just rant, he casually just puts on the Vulture costume and just hops out the window and just leaves Norman talking.
And Norman's like, you're making me look bad.
Yeah, he loses his shit when Toomes walks out on the call. Like, it's such a power move for the old man.
Toomes, are you threatening me? Toomes! Toomes, are you there? Toomes!
They could have, like, just started talking shit about him once as soon as he's gone. Like, you know what? I'm glad he didn't come in person. He's got that old man stink. It would knock you on your ass to smell this guy. Like, there aren't enough Werther's Originals in the world to mask that failed kidney breath he's sporting.
And he's been in that robe now for, like, 3 years straight.
Yeah, he doesn't have wings. It's just tattered old man robes. I mean, death's not far off for Toomes, but not far off from this scene is Central Park, where Spider-Man is bitching about his life when a young boy that he was watching is attacked by Adrian Toomes. Using his suit, Toomes temporarily steals the boy's youth, leading to a fight that Spidey narrowly survives. The age theft seems to be temporary, though, and a re-aged Toomes flies off, vowing to drain an adult next time, which is a whole other thing.
That kid on roller skates was so cool. He had all the safety padding.
Oh my god. He did not have the one type of safety padding that my parents insisted I purchase, which
the wrist guards
is true.
Oh yeah.
The wrist guards. You have those things that like brace your wrists. Oh man. And like they look so lame, and then you would fall on concrete and you use them, you're like, "Oh yeah, that would have shredded my hands." That's a solid work, Mom.
Yep.
Spider-Man creeping on a supple boy.
Look at that kid.
Yeah, and it's the one person in New York that's specifically being watched by Spider-Man at that time. Like, it's so unlikely that that happens.
In the park.
Yeah.
He could have just been, you know, flying over and Spider-Man could have followed him because it's weird. He says, oh, is that the Hobgoblin?
Oh, God.
That's a reasonable thing to ask. And then, you know, he follows into the park and he sees what happens. That would have been perfectly normal. But they decide to make it complete happenstance.
I mean, that's like 90% of the time is what happens, right?
Well, usually like, there's an alarm as he's coming by or like he has a police scanner sometimes. You know what I mean?
It would have been cool if he had, like, PTSD when he saw the swoop overhead in Central Park that he thought it was Michael Morbius for a second. And being like, Michael's back?
Not at all.
Not at all. He's not back at all.
Yeah. I mean, even Spider-Man doesn't have respect for this guy. He calls him a flying flamingo.
Who is this flying flamingo?
Flamingos can fly. And this guy isn't pink, so I don't really get why he said that. It's not really an insult.
He should have made a pigeon joke like, whoa, I hear these New York pigeons are getting out of hand. Wow, I said that really kind of New York-ly, but
New York.
Yeah, but that was great. That's a quality quip. I like that one way better.
Move out of the way, Spider-Man. I'm the Spider-Gwen.
So Vulture swoops in and he grabs the kid and he drains him of his life force. And it's not really like the main point of his power to incapacitate people, but that is a side effect and a powerful one. that he doesn't really use throughout the episode, which is kind of strange.
But he doesn't really incapacitate them. He just makes them old.
At least temporarily they are, pretty much in every single situation.
Well, they're old. They're taking a nap.
It's 4 o'clock. They got their early bird special at Denny's. I will say the animation of him swooping in to grab the kid, like the shot was really cool. They did a really good perspective of his hands actually kind of looking like talons. As a whole, I'd say that the animation is pretty solid this episode. There's some really good bits.
Little bits.
Yeah, it's pretty solid. I went back and watched a couple of early episodes, basically to steal pictures to make merch. I was shocked at kind of how much better the animation is in the first season.
Shocked.
I was shocked.
Yeah, that's fair.
But after he transforms into young Adrian Toomes, he is actually played by a different actor here.
Mm-hmm.
Young Toomes is played by Alan Johnson, which sounds like a name that I just kind of made up off the top of my head. And yeah, he seems like that kind of person. He hasn't really done anything else interesting. And one of the pictures on his IMDb page has him holding juggling pins. So like, whatever.
That's actually funny because I'm watching this British show called Peep Show and there's a character named Alan Johnson.
Yeah, it seems very normal. It's the most normal name.
But the Alan Johnson in the show is a magnificent human being.
And then I'm going to make you feel like you're a turkey fucker. Why? Because I'm the big man and you're a shitheel, right?
Brilliant. That is just so spot on.
So I don't know about you guys, but this is the iteration of the Vulture that I remember the most. The life force stealing one. And I always thought that that was the character's motivations. I didn't think that it was just like minor story arc. Like I thought that's what the Vulture did. He went and just like absorbed life force. So when like Spider-Man Homecoming came out, I'm like, oh, is he going to go and absorb the life force of like all these people? Because that would have been cool. But yeah.
Yeah, it's really kind of a departure from all the previous source material, and not much else past this really takes it up either. It's kind of their own unique twist on the character, which I think it works.
Well, yeah, they made it part of the character rather than like in the comic where he goes and steals the Juvenator.
Why is it not the Rejuvenator?
Yeah.
Whatever. Because it makes things juvenile.
So I actually had a note being like, why is he called the Vulture and not something more powerful? But now that you brought up Spider-Man Homecoming movie, I see the parallels in that they're both scavengers. That's one is fair, taking technology, in the case of the movie, and this one is taking youth.
The fight itself here, like, what do you guys think? I thought it was all right. I mean, it's pretty short.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. You see Spider-Man being really strong to lift that huge tree and then get decked by another tree.
Oh, that was fucking ridiculous.
There's always a bigger tree.
When he de-ages, he's still ripped. I don't know what he's complaining about. You've got Silvermane over there from the last episode who can barely string a sentence together in one breath. And he looks like he's done yoga. He's got his toes pointed when he's flying. Like
it's probably all the suit, Vera.
Maybe it's painted on like Doc Ock, the fake six pack.
This whole episode, he even when he's old, he does not act old ever. Realistically, you think of some old frail guy would not be able to handle like all of this shit flying around, but he's perfectly fine all the time.
He just crashes the first time he takes off.
But when he de-ages, he's literally spewing DNA evidence out of all of his pores because he loses all of his fucking hair every time. Like, the cops are just going to be like, some sort of serial barber is on the loose.
The one thing that bothers me about this whole de-aging process is how does it go back into the original person?
It's their soul.
That's it? We're saying magic now? That's what we're doing?
Kind of, because it's the Tablet of Time, so it's all magic.
Yeah, that's fair, that's fair.
It's the Toltecs, they figured it out.
Peter, a wizard did it.
That is such a Kevin thing to say. It's never the wizards. One time I don't want it to be the wizards.
They try to cram one more fucking terrible vitamin joke into this episode, though.
Yeah.
What happened to me?
I don't know, but I want the name of the vitamins you took this morning.
Like, cool. Is he and Terry Lee consulting on this garbage now? That's one thing I don't get here. It really feels like the younger the person is, the more effective his technology should be. You know what I mean?
That's what I thought too, yeah.
Like he steals this kid's energy and it doesn't last very long. And he starts talking to himself while he's flying away and he explains it for us. Which, I mean, you gotta get your rules out there. I get it.
I need to absorb the energy of a fully grown adult to give myself more time. Then I'm coming for you, Osborn. I am coming!
I guess he's stealing energy, so like a bigger person has more of it. Like, does it have to even be a person then? Could he go to the fucking Central Park Zoo and like slurp down a gorilla and just go ape shit on everybody?
Ape shit.
Yeah, it was an unintentional pun, but I'm bemoaning it.
When we were watching the episode, I made the point of, why doesn't he just have a slave that he just steals their youth, like chained up?
So again, it's a sex thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we all know the rich have slaves, so why not just use your slave? I guess it's his slave. Like, you want to use somebody else's slave. I mean, that's your slave. Back at Tombs Aerodynamic, the big awards ceremony for the fabled science grant is nigh. Tombs drains the youth from a security guard and then hunts down Norman Osborn, who's wandering around the property after the board meeting, chasing him into a warehouse and trying to take him out.
Norman was just talking shit in the alleyway.
Norman Osborn's on his fucking 90s cell phone when the vulture shows up here. He's loving himself while he's talking shit.
I'll win the board vote tomorrow. Tombs! He's too feeble to launch any kind of a fight. He's doomed.
Like, whoever's on the end of the line is just like, can't get a word in edgewise because he's insulting Tombs so much. And then things get super dangerous, and for some reason he doesn't use the phone he has in his hand to call for help. Like, is it not a real phone? Is it like filled with candy? What is this?
Well, he only has so many minutes.
Three. It was the 90s, so he's got three.
To add minutes, purchase another TELUS phone card. Like that guy.
Norman is going and like ragged on Tombs. He's just like, Tombs? Well, he's the suckiest suck that ever sucked. Like, what a wiener. Hold on. Some flying wiener's attacking me. Ah!
Yeah.
What the devil?
Oh, God, the wiener's all over.
Oh, he's as pathetic as that nephew Silvermane told me about. Did you hear about that kid?
Oh, my gosh. How come Norman Osborn is going to this whole thing? No card, no bodyguards, on it, like just on his cell phone to himself?
The only thing I can think of is I guess he would presume to be safe inside the compound because like you have to go through security in order to get inside.
Right.
I find this whole idea of him draining the security guard very strange. Like, it sticks out for two reasons. First, it's terrifying.
Yeah, it's pretty scary.
Objectively, when he gets the Crypt Keeper hands. But two, it's incredibly stupid to attack a guy that's super visible to literally everyone attending this important ceremony. Like, he's literally the doorman. Everybody is going through past the security booth. It's made of glass. And then the lineup is just going to keep getting longer and longer because, like, this guy's too feeble to open the gate now. Like, people saw that. There's no way people didn't see that. And then they're just like, whatever.
Yeah, he should have just, like, picked him up, flew him somewhere, exsanguinated his youth there.
Nice.
Yeah. Shout out to Hannah for that one. And then, like, hit him.
Yeah. Or just pick anybody that, maybe somebody who doesn't work for you. How about that? And isn't in charge of security for the compound that you own.
He probably has a vendetta against fucking Jim the security
guard. He called me old once.
He ate my lunch when it was in the fridge.
Does sucking someone's youth also give him super strength?
Silvermane was able to do backflips and bloody parkour, so I guess.
Oh, Vero, it was worse in the comic. In the comic, Silvermane goes toe-to-toe with Spider-Man.
They were the greatest generation, you know? They were just tougher back then.
Because they were walking to school uphill both ways.
That's how they beat the commies and the Nazis.
And then the commie Nazis. I mean, not much happens in the rest of these, like, quick scenes. It's just kind of like little Vulture fucking around with Norman a bit, like hunting him down. He pulls out a laser gun.
Channeling his inner Hobgoblin.
Yeah, Vultures are known for their talons, age theft, and laser pistols. Birds, you know. So they keep cutting back and forth between this like game of cat and mouse and the awards ceremony. And it's often for as little as 3.5 seconds, which is really weird. Like, I guess they didn't think the award ceremony was interesting enough. And speaking of which, Peter Parker also shows up to take pictures at the award ceremony. Sure enough, Dr. Kirk Connors and his neogenic recombinator win, which is good news for Peter. And then the doc picks Deborah Whitman as his assistant, which is not good news for Peter. Flash Thompson and Felicia Hardy are also on the scene to provide mixed signals and pointless flashbacks.
Yay, Kirk Connors is back. Neogenics.
Yay, the thing. I would have liked a montage of who else was in the contest. The amount of time that the neogenic recombinator hasn't actually been used because it's been MIA means they did like zero work.
Yeah, but everybody else was probably doing legitimate science. So all they have is real science, which is like, we have this graph that suggests that with this therapy in 8 to 10 years,
we made vampires.
Your likelihood of contracting this disease.
We've made scorpion
men. Seriously, we'll be able to reduce your risk of that type of specific cancer.
We grew back limbs and turned
8%.
Ourselves into lizards.
I've heard enough. Give it to the monster men. All the fucking nerds pack up their graphs and go home.
Did Peter really think he was going to win? Like, he's literally done zero work.
Yeah, he's never there.
That's literal white man privilege if there's ever white man privilege.
The immigrant man's missing, and he's not going to pick a woman. He's clearly going to pick me.
At least Peter's back in the tux, so drink to that, guys.
Uncle Ben funeral tux.
And everyone else has the same fucking tux in a different color.
I saw one guy in a suit. I'm like, what do you think you are, you fucking idiot? Put on a fucking tux or get the hell out of here.
Yeah, there was a sale at the Cummerbund store, so let's go already.
You know what? Even rich people reuse outfits, because Felicia's in that same dress from when she laid a smooch on Peter.
Oh yeah, I remember that upper thigh.
Oh.
I recognize that slit anywhere.
Oh, come on, Vera.
You and Flash Thompson.
Oh, God.
Oh, shit.
Dress slit.
Oh, my God.
See what you think of this one.
So here Peter goes and complains that his like academic life is suffering. I'm like, you're a fucking genius, man. No one else would have been able to handle being Spider-Man and like living a normal life and succeeding in school.
True, but you know, that's life. You want it all.
He's coasting on those mid to high 90s, but someone keeps beating him to those awards.
He's gonna have to take one of those jobs where you hate yourself, but you make a lot of money.
Like a computer programmer.
Yeah, it's fair. Deborah's a real dick about winning that assistant position. Like, I really didn't like that. She loses any real points in my book because her first impulse is to put other people down rather than be happy for herself.
Well, you know what, Kevin? She earned it, okay?
I guess so, but you don't have to be mean. Her work-life balance ways and sensible shoe choices have paid off, so maybe just be happy in the moment. That's all I'm saying.
I have chosen as my lab assistant, Deborah Whitman.
Peter, next time show up for class once in a while.
So Flash is going and taking Felicia home here, and everyone's okay with this, except Deb, I guess.
When I was watching the actual episode, like as I was watching through it, I got really confused at this point. I think it's explained a little bit more through context later, but the way that Flash and Deborah interact here is very confusing.
Oh, for sure.
Didn't know what their deal was. I assume they were dating because she got picked up by him earlier. And the way he picks her up off the stage here is very familiar, but I guess she's just his tutor.
Oh, I bet.
I think it's one of those things he doesn't realize he has feelings for her. So he's like instinctively is being extra friendly and excited for her. But then his ex-girlfriend, who's smoking hot, comes over to him and he just falls back into old habits.
I was sure Michael Morbius or Peter Parker would win.
No way! You're the best!
Congratulations, Deborah. Flash, this evening's reminded me so much of Michael. I'm drained. Would you take me home, please?
Sure thing, Felicia.
But all of this cascades, and then Peter's right back to feeling shitty about Mary Jane. And I'm not sure whether this is something we have to be keeping on our minds or whatever, or if they're just, you know, using more flashbacks to save money again.
And then Peter goes and says that he practically flung Mary Jane into his best friend's arms. I'm pretty sure Harry had something to do with that because he kept asking her out for months.
Constantly.
That best friend that I hardly know.
Just saw his opening and he swooped right in.
Like a vulture. Peter Parker steps out for air, but his spider sense alerts him to danger. He manages to save Norman Osborn from falling to his death, but once again, as his youth leaves him, the vulture flees. Spidey tries to stay with him, but is eluded, settling for getting a snapshot, which he then uses to figure out the identity of his avian adversary.
So, did Norman get who it is yet after all that stuff that Vulture was saying?
You'd think. He basically admitted who he was, but... And this is actually legitimately maybe an hour after Toomes threatened him.
Yeah.
Wait, anti-gravity. Wait, he looks younger. It's Toomes.
Well, I guess he wouldn't know what Toomes looked like when he was young.
Does anybody?
I mean, they hadn't invented photography yet, so there's really no evidence.
Yeah, because it was in 1910.
Who are you? Much like yourself, I'm a vulture, but more dangerous. Your stock is about to take a plunge, Osborne.
Like, this scene is mostly about the fight, and it's kind of a cool fight because the set piece is really neat. It's sort of an airplane museum idea. And it makes it an interesting battlefield. Like, it's a variable terrain. Spider-Man gets to use his agility, and he lets him keep up with the Vulture, who, you know, we've seen what happens when it's a big open-air thing with Hobgoblin and how shitty that can be for fighting.
Right.
So this has made it a lot more interesting. But I guess they just keep these planes chock full of jet fuel so that they'll explode on impact if there's ever an accident.
Well, you never know when Toomes wants to just go and take one for a spin.
There you go.
He's just like climbing up there and flying away. I'll take this Bruce Moose.
Hop in.
I said hop in.
The agility that Spider-Man has is really like showcased in this episode with this scene and then one later. Spider-Man's real limber.
Yeah, I mean, the Vulture is implied to have like razor sharp wings. He cuts through tree trunks with them. So one hit from these things presumably would kill him. And he's always kind of moving around and stuff, which is cool.
Yeah, for sure.
I think the only explanation we really get here is anti-gravity. Like, it really doesn't seem like the Vulture needs his wings to fly. Like, he spends a lot of time turning randomly without gliding. He doesn't have to flap his wings. He can gain speed at any time. Like, is it ever really explained better in the comics, at least?
In the comics, it's just magnetism. Spider-Man finds out it's magnetism because his flying is silent. Does no one listen to my comic book minute?
I did. I just don't understand how he gets momentum then. If it's anti-gravity.
Magnets.
In this show, it's not magnets.
Magnets.
Magnets. You don't. No, the answer is magnets.
Water, fire, air, and dirt. Fucking magnets. How do they work?
I think we got to keep track here of the number of times that Vulture just gets old again and then flies off a la Morbius.
Oh, it's very similar. I must feed. See ya.
Forgive me.
Forgive me.
Forgive me.
It's literally all he did was just like, I'm sorry. And then leave.
Get old, peace out. That's his plan.
Except to peace out, he goes head first through the hangar.
Oh my god. He's old again, and then he smashes face first through a concrete roof. Like, he should be dead. He's got like a half helmet on. That's about it. It's not like this is the last time he does this shit. He's a 90-year-old man, and a stiff breeze should be breaking his ribs. Like, I'm not saying the suit can't accelerate him the way it does, but I'm saying that he would be turned into mush doing the things he's doing.
You're right. He should just be dead because he's so old. Did you guys notice the truck that gets smashed when they're flying through the city? I sent it to you guys. It's a fucking UPS truck.
I was going to say, once it gets smashed, it's kind of like a flattel van, but...
Oh, good lord. That's it. We've peaked. It's the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Flattel van. Get real thin.
Flattel van. Make me a flapjack.
So Peter goes back home to his computer after he takes a photo of the Vulture to try and figure out who he is, because, of course, he doesn't wear a fucking mask. First, he develops the photo.
The Vulture, huh? I wonder who he is when he's at home. Oh, computer enhancement might help.
It just zooms in slightly and gets more pixelated. It's like, you didn't enhance shit.
Enhance.
And then he goes and does like a face search.
With a 30% margin of error.
30 fucking percent is huge.
Hey, that's probably the most realistic part of this whole thing. Toomes does look like dog shit in that picture, though.
The picture's like from 5 days ago.
So the picture of him like looking backwards is bad. The picture like that is an official shot, like his headshot, is way worse. Like, he's straight crip creeping over there. Like, what the fuck is that?
They didn't skimp on the acne scars.
Oh, jeez.
I think those are just wrinkles at this point. They're craters.
Yeah, that's fair. He's the thing that Seal has.
Oh, what? No, do not bring Seal into this. The man is a treasure.
The man is a treasure. Kiss from a rose. Mwah.
And that other one.
At the new Neogenics lab, Deborah Whitman is hanging out with Flash Thompson when a youthful Adrian Toomes, operating under a pseudonym, enters to hit on her and insult Flash. Peter shows up to snoop, but he and Thompson are promptly booted out by Deborah, so, in between barbs, Peter spells out Deborah's feelings for Flash.
Why is Flash there? And another question, why does he want to be tutored so badly?
Because if you drop below like a 60, you often lose your scholarship.
Flash is super excited about these tutoring sessions.
Look, when can I set up another tutoring session with you?
I'm afraid Miss Whitman will be too busy for that sort of thing.
And yeah. I feel like his tutoring sessions are just her blowing him in his car in a parking lot behind an Arby's. Which is why he just shows up and honks the horn at her. And that's why he's so eager to have another one. Like, it's yeah. also why she's always got a hair and a ponytail. Like, it's just blowjobs.
I'm trying to think of how it would work of him absorbing her knowledge, but it only works the other way around. If he was the smart one and it was like, gosh. If you suck my dick, you'll get smart too.
So the young Vulture comes in here under the alias Arthur Avis.
I'm Arthur Avis, Mr. Toombs' new second in command.
And I'm just like, wow, even in his fantasy, he's an assistant to the regional manager.
Yeah, it's true. Toombs says his name is Arthur Avis. Avis is Latin for bird.
Yep.
Which jumped out at me. And then Arthur, I mean, you could argue is mostly associated with like King Arthur. So his name might just mean like Bird King.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I caught that too.
He just wanted to rename himself Avis because he clearly has an aviation boner.
Mm. Well, yeah.
Really wants to steer into those bird puns.
It's super weird that Toombs is even trying to like come in here and hit on Deborah. It literally never comes up again, and it only kind of make Flash jealous. Like, it doesn't serve that great of a purpose. And also, who did he drain in order to do this?
Yeah, it's literally just for them to be like, oh, Flash is a little jealous.
Arthur Avis makes an awesome jab at Flash. Everyone's fucking razzing Flash in this episode. It's great.
He forgot to tell me you were beautiful as well.
Why, thank you, Mr. Avis.
Please, call me Arthur. I hope I'll be seeing a lot more of you. And no offense, a lot less of you.
And then Peter comes in with a follow-up.
Yeah, his is very, like, playground-esque, though.
What an arrogant, egotistical...
You know what they say, Flash? It takes one to know one.
Oh! It's just destroying Flash.
So Flash tries to get back at Peter by saying,
hey, play your cards right, and maybe you can wash Deb's test tubes.
And I'm like, actually, that makes sense, because Elisa's clearly MIA, and she was the one doing that before.
How does Flash not get that Deb is into him? You know what he's mutating into, Kevin?
A real jerk?
A real jerk.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I think maybe he's just got that beautiful people problem where he thinks that everyone's just nice to you because everyone's always nice to beautiful people. Like, he's the captain of the football team, a handsome guy.
Yeah, I know. I have the same problem.
Yeah, I wouldn't know, but...
Well, also, he's used to dating Felicia Hardy, who tries to run you over with her car when she likes you.
That's how he got onto the football team. The coach was just watching her try and run him over the parking lot. He's like, this man can't be sacked.
Quarterback.
Sign him to a contract. Get that man a free communications degree.
Yeah, no, that's basically how it goes. And then there's another awesome jab by Peter here to Flash.
Hey. She definitely likes you, pal, so she can't be that smart.
Like, they get booted and they go for a little walk here, and Peter is really embracing the Spider-Man lifestyle, I felt, even when he's not in the costume, because he makes some solid quips while insulting Flash, and then he does the right thing, even though he probably doesn't really want to. He's giving him good advice, but he's also making fun of him. That's what Spider-Man does. He does the right thing and he makes jokes.
Yeah, for sure. Did you guys notice how fucking high Flash and Peter's pants are as they walk away?
They are a Levi's special.
Is it their pants or do they just have those long dancer's legs?
No, they've got the mom jeans on.
Oh my gosh.
Mom jeans.
Those Levi's 501s. Waist high.
It's standard issue at ESU. Dr. Kirk Connors arrives to a meeting with Toombs. Toombs incapacitates him and then tells us what we already know. He's using the Tablet of Time technology to steal youth and his other technology to try and eliminate Norman Osborn. But he's going to go through his son, Harry Osborn, to do it.
The Toombs building is so fucking art deco. I felt like I was reading Atlas Shrugged or something.
Felt like it was a crossover with fucking Batman the Animated Series.
Ooh, yeah. Very gothic and gold.
It also reminded me of the Baxter Building from Fantastic Four.
I was more impressed that Toombs was able to figure out the Tablet of Time, where we spent, you know, at least a week with it in the previous episode and no one figured it out. I'd like to think that he actually just hired an archaeologist to translate it. It turns out it was really easy to do. Make sure you hit it with probably like a UV light.
I love Doc Connor's face when Toombs says that neogenics is the hope for the future.
Neogenics is my hope for the future.
It's fucking priceless. He's like, neogenics, I love it.
So Connors kind of goads him inadvertently by mentioning that it's going to be his legacy, because obviously Toombs is super sensitive about his apparent old age.
He's got a hair trigger.
And then I realized it was like Silvermane had all the liver spots. And then I mentioned, oh, he doesn't do a coughing fit, really. Then they gave Toombs the coughing fit. So they can only do one old man thing per old man.
Mr. Toombs, are you okay?
I'm sorry, Doctor, but my time is short, and you are available to me now.
There's a lot of old men in these last three episodes.
It's true. I think the coughing fit might have been a fake, though.
Oh, yeah.
It's true.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
It's how he suckers him in to get close enough to withstand the old man breath for a second, and then he slaps his neural neutralizer on him.
It reminded me of that thing from Thor Ragnarok, except it's not like shocking them. It's just like, thwip.
So this neural neutralizer will keep you safely paralyzed.
I like that they actually follow through with this and like show the Tablet of Time.
You can appreciate my plan. Look, see my beautiful talons. They are the end result of a lost technology deciphered from the Tablet of Time.
But like for a second there, I thought he was just going to ask Doc Connors to decipher it again. And then Doc Connors sees it and he's like, no!
No, he's just blasts it with the neogenic recombinator again. Like, yeah. This is fine. It'll be fine.
He like sees it and then just turns into lizard immediately, kills the fucking vulture, like destroys the tablet.
Scurries into the sewer.
And he's like, Margaret, and then scurries away.
His speech and cadence through this whole thing is oddly sing-song and kind of sexual. I don't know. My beautiful talents.
Oh.
My elegant wings. I'm going to touch your penis when you're unconscious.
Not only does this neuralizer make you not be able to move, but it also gives you a massive erection.
I am coming!
Toombs was smart enough to bring a kitchen timer with him this time.
Oh yeah. Finally figures out how much time he has when he drains someone. How many people, though, did he have to drain to figure that out, right? Didn't he have to know their age? Like, oh, a 45-year-old's going to go and give me 45 minutes.
Yeah, how sensitive is it?
Yeah.
I guess he's been testing it, like, all night or something, because it seemed, like, very much like the child at the beginning was the very first time he's ever had it done. Because he yells, it works.
Do you think he could supercharge it? What if he, like, sucked three adults' youth?
One after another? Young? Yeah, would it chain? Or would he get younger?
Or, you know, like, would he be doing back-to-back hand jobs? Like, no, Silicon Valley thing where they're like, okay, if you give two...
Yep.
What I would say is, like, maybe if he does more than one, he gets too young.
But wouldn't you want to be, like, 21? Isn't that the prime athleticism?
I think that's what he kind of is. And then, like, maybe if he drains another one, he'll turn into, like, a child. They give a little bit of context to the end of this where he says,
Osborn will expect me to attack him again. But I have a better plan. Thanks to my corporate spies, I know where to find his son, Harry.
His motivations are a little unclear here. It seems like he wants to be young again permanently, kind of like Silvermane, but I feel like they're trying to downplay that so it's not exactly like the thing we just saw. Instead, he's just like, I guess he just wants to be young to kill Norman Osborn.
But does he need to be young to do that?
It really doesn't seem like he does, because he can smash through walls without being young.
He also has a gun that he could just shoot Norman with.
But he also has a lot of money and can just pay someone to do it.
Who's he going to pay? Hobgoblin?
Hammerhead. He knows him.
Oh, yeah, they're friends.
Yeah, but he's fucking inept. I don't know.
It's very unclear. Norman wants to take over his company because Toombs is old and Toombs doesn't want his company to go away, so he's going to be young, which is literally what Silvermane said.
Yeah. What does getting Harry get you, you know?
He gets back at Norman for calling him a vulture, even though now he calls himself a vulture.
It's pretty petty. I don't know.
All he needed was, like, he's going to take something precious from me, a.k.a. my company, so I'll take something precious from him.
Yeah.
But we've made this joke where it's like, Is Harry really precious to Norman?
Clearly not. Except, I mean, he'd give a speech if he dies, but that's about it.
He'd probably donate a wing to the science lab that Harry was flunking out of.
Peter makes his way to an outdoor theater at the invite of Mary Jane, who is preparing to take to the stage. She reveals that she's gotten a letter from her estranged father and wants Peter to come and meet him with her. As Peter ponders this and settles into the play, the Vulture arrives to try and take Harry Osborn, who's also in attendance. Another fight ensues as Spider-Man protects Osborn until the Vulture once again beats a hasty retreat.
So, like, is Peter throwing shade at Harry? Like, have they talked since him and Mary Jane have been dating?
I don't see how you could, man. I wouldn't talk to that guy.
Are they ex-best friends now?
It'd be funny if they had a scene where he sees him and he's like, feels like I don't even know you anymore.
In fact, I didn't know you that much before either.
Count it.
Peter saying that Mary Jane and Harry might have some big announcement is like way too real in my own life.
Big news too.
With my luck, she's going to tell me that she and Harry have a big announcement to make.
Did you guys see the guy who's like wheeling the skeleton along? Yeah. He fucking hates his job. So much. There's not an ounce of pleasure in that face.
I don't know, man. His face looks like a fucking skull, too.
It's true.
I can't tell who's more unhappy, him or the fucking skeleton.
Are they related?
Oh, it's probably his brother's skeleton.
Father?
Father?
Yeah, after their little conversation, she kind of invites him to go sit in the audience and watch her play, which is maybe this whole thing was just a ruse to try and get more butts in the seats. Because if you ever have a person in your life who does theater, they're always trying to trick you into going to see their terrible shows.
Also, musicians.
I like the way she says,
"You've lost both your parents. If anyone can understand what I've been through, it's you."
But what about Harry?
Harry and I.
5 minutes, everyone. 5 minutes.
Yeah, about Harry. Do you know he has that thing with feet? It's just like, because you can tell she's kind of not in. She wants to say she's not into Harry.
She doesn't want to out him, but she also wants to throw some goss around.
Harry just can't please her the way that Peter could.
Yeah, man. He's got that spider dexterity.
That's it.
His busy hands are very agile.
Yeah, he could lift you up by one finger.
So they cut to the play.
I take a second because I spent like an hour once I started down this rabbit hole. They are doing the play Faust by Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, wherein a man makes a deal with the devil for knowledge and power. And then later she says a line from the play, so you know that's correct. But what's odd is that she also says,
"It's Goethe's Faust. Not a lot of laughs, but you'll love the tunes."
This is not a musical. It is a tragic play. So there are no tunes, which doesn't make any sense. But there is an opera that's also quite famous based on Faust, and it's by Junot, I think. And in it, one of the big differences between the play and the opera is that Faust not just gets knowledge, but also is given an elixir of youth, which would be very pertinent to the episode. But which one of these two things is it? It can't be the play and the opera. And this is further complicated by the fact that the next line for Faust, after the one is said on stage, is, "There must be such queer birds, however," which again, Vulture. And then this also raises a further point, which is that the Vulture says he had 30 minutes of youth in the previous scene, which was nighttime, and now it's day. And then this scene is like scene 16. So they're well over an hour into this fucking play.
Wow, you really went down a rabbit hole, eh?
I know. I'm like, what the fuck is happening with this and also my life? It feels like Semper Senpai was trying to be clever in writing this, but researched it in the time before Wikipedia. So he had to he just saw Faust as one big thing. And just took all these different parts from it, you know?
But do you guys see how enthralled Harry is with this fucking play?
Ooh!
Aw, yes!
Aw, that's cute then. Like, he actually cares.
Is it awkward that Peter and Harry are not sitting beside each other? Or is that fine?
I don't think she wants him to know that he came.
Yeah.
Because she was basically going to admit that they're having problems.
Right.
You can't let your mistress or mastress and your main squeeze sit next to each other, you know?
That's
yeah, she kept, I think it was a secret. I like that. At this point, MJ is pretty much a professional. She's done a couple of plays. You know, you're not supposed to break character when the horrible flying monster man goes over your audience. You got to keep the show going.
That's right.
Well, that's not what we rehearsed.
This isn't how we rehearsed it.
Everyone fucking fled. And then Harry's just like, oh, what's going on?
Yeah.
I have another question. How many times does Harry Osborn have to get picked up by winged villains?
Right?
Comes all the fly boys hate this guy.
Yep.
And the man spiders. He's just got one of those faces.
Yeah. If he wasn't such a wiener, it'd be harder to hate him so much.
And also Mary Jane just stands there and screams. It doesn't run away like everyone else.
Or they're just so used to this sort of shit happening. They're like, yeah, yeah, let's go. So while Harry's there paralyzed by fear, Vulture just carries him off. And Peter manages to change into Spider-Man and quickly get over there and just yank him. Like, that's his solution, is to web Harry by the ankles and yank him out of the grasp of the Vulture. So he falls at like a pretty high speed and is only barely saved from dashing his brains on the stage. Like, he got an inch away from being Gwen Stacy, dear.
Yeah, it wasn't that great of a fight. Before Vulture leaves, he's like, uh-oh, 5 minutes of youth left. I'm like, yep, that's how I feel every day. Yeah. Yeah. And then he's like, no time to finish. I'm like, yeah, we've all been there.
The Vulture returns to the roost, but is spotted by Deborah Whitman, who calls up Peter Parker. Midway through her call, she's caught and drained of her youth, but that's enough to get Spider-Man on the case. He arrives and runs into Flash Thompson, telling him to head home before he chases after the Vulture, but Flash has other ideas.
Suck on that, Deborah. That's what you get for being a snitch.
Oh,
snitches get stitches.
Yeah, or snitches get their youth fucking sucked out.
So Deborah's just staring out the window, kind of giving up the work-life balance, but it's your first day. You want to make a good impression. And the Vulture swoops in, and like, he's not even trying to hide his identity anymore. Yeah. Like, he's just flying by the windows, which she's not the only person working here. There's probably hundreds of people looking at these windows, and he's not wearing a fucking mask. It's so lazy.
Yeah.
So she calls up Peter Parker.
Parker here. Please leave a message.
Parker, I just saw some creepy giant bird land on Toombs' penthouse. Was this what you were trying to ask me about? Well, anyway, I thought I'd give you the story before I call the cops. Get over here and bring your camera.
He ambushes her and starts draining her of her youth. Like, he doesn't even wait till she hangs up the phone.
Well, what's he gonna do? Like, could you just hang up for a second?
I mean, it's only going to make it worse if she starts screaming mid-sentence. It's literally her screaming in horror and the sounds of crazy gadgets going off in the background. It seems much more likely that the police are going to be involved.
Yeah, I don't know. I think all of this is just a quote-unquote crime of passion for the Vulture.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting towards. I think he's kind of gone like berserker mode.
The 90s girl in me immediately glommed on to the fact that when Deborah calls Peter, it goes directly to a private answering machine. And then I was like, oh my God, does Peter have his own phone line? And then I got into a huge jealousy spiral, because that's like the one thing you wanted growing up. No one interrupting you, no mom picking up the phone.
Mom, I swear to God!
One too many times he's trying to download like a topless photo of Meg Ryan, and then Aunt May picks up the call to give her like friend Anna Watson a ring, and he gets it interrupted at the last second.
I do not miss those days.
It's cute that Flash took Peter Parker's advice to heart and realized that, like, oh, let me bring some flowers to old Deborah.
Thompson, what are you doing here? Spider-Man! I was only looking for someone. See? For me? You shouldn't have.
No.
How do you not know that he's just not using it as an easy in to get laid?
Listen, he knows he's not getting into the NFL. He's probably going to peak during university. Deborah's smart as shit. He wants to be a trophy husband.
I love how Flash holds on so tightly to that bouquet after Spider-Man's like, oh, for me?
Maybe, though. Like, I don't know. I'm not going to give it to you. If you want it. Like, I don't care.
Oh, okay, Flash. This is getting kind of weird. But Flash is really getting it this episode, like verbally, getting fucking abused.
And kind of rightly so. He says, like,
we make a heck of a team. Remember when we faced the Spider Slayers together and
You mean when Spider-Man beat them and you literally were standing in a hole and pissing yourself, crying?
Saying you weren't the real Spider-Man because you can't stick to walls.
Yeah, real team effort there, bud. Thank you. I can't do that without you.
Flash, I remember. Go home.
Well, Flash Thompson pretends to skulk away, and then Spider-Man breaks into Toomes' building while avoiding his security system as the Vulture watches on his cameras. As Flash Thompson not so stealthily brings up the rear, Spidey discovers and then releases Doc Connors from the neural neutralizer, sending him to safety.
The animation of him going, hoo, ha, wah, dodging the guns is pretty sweet.
Yeah, some good cartwheels in that.
I like that. It was, he says, like,
great, I'm trapped in a gigantic video game. At least I don't need any quarters.
I thought it was kind of cool, and I even liked how he ended up defeating it using math, which, you know, it's always fun.
Yay, math.
Good thing I'm a math whiz.
Flash just kind of walks in after Spider-Man does everything.
Yeah, and he thinks he's being, like, clever and stealthy and stuff. He walks towards the elevator, and then Toomes says, like, I think he'll be useful. And so he sends an elevator to pick him up. Like, the elevator won't just come to you.
Yeah, that's fair.
And Flash just rolls with it, like, I did it. I solved the puzzle.
Flash gets everything in life. Why wouldn't he assume that an elevator would come for him right when he needs it?
Well, when you're beautiful, things just open up for you.
Exactly.
Peter would know.
Maybe my handsome face will open this door for me. It's opened a lot of doors before.
Well, it opened because you stepped on that map, but even if it didn't, it would open because you're beautiful.
Yes.
But also, does Peter not know that Flash is, like, hiding about and everything? Like, is he not getting anything from his spider sense?
He's got other things to worry about here, like releasing Dr. Connors from his uncomfortable silence disc.
How do we not know that it goes and, like, puts them into some awesome dream that they enjoy?
Yeah, their pants are just full of jism.
Oh, God. Yeah, exactly. How do you know?
Well, you know, because they're still purple when it cuts back to Connors. So Spider-Man comes up and lets Doc Connors free of this thing, and it's kind of pointless. He just lets him go.
Yes, run along.
It's so weird how they sometimes decide to give you a shot of him, you know, draining somebody. Like, he does here, and then he goes after Harry. You're like, okay, I guess that's fine. And then, you know, previous to that, when he was a young man going to talk to Deborah, they didn't show you him draining anybody, so you don't know where it came from. But it's still fine. You can assume that he's doing that in the background. But it's just weird that sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't, and it really doesn't fucking matter. Like, I guess it's really just to set up this neuroneutralizer.
It's a thing.
It's completely unnecessary. I don't know. I don't like him. Boo.
Flash discovers an aged Deborah, and they share a tender moment before the Vulture tries to drain Flash as well. He and Spider-Man tangle, and when Spidey gets the upper hand, Vulture activates a bomb to destroy the entire building and slaps one of his brain scramblers on our hero. Luckily, Flash wanders by to take it off, allowing Spider-Man to swing both of them to safety just in the nick of time.
So for some reason, I remember this super old Deborah from when I was a kid, and it was actually pretty terrifying.
Yeah, I remember it a lot, too. I think they put it in intros. Like, I think it's in recaps. I specifically remember going, they made me old! Yeah.
And they also gave her, like, a Florida accent as she got older.
What happened?
He made me old! Please do something! Help me!
Well, she basically turns into an average 35-year-old Florida woman. Like, she's got this leathery skin and wrinkles and shit. Like, she's like, you have to help me get back to Tallahassee. They're having a wet t-shirt contest I need to make people uncomfortable about.
Wow. And Flash is like, I'm going to go.
He just doesn't realize it until this moment, but that's my fetish, so.
He just licks his lips.
Like, he actually seems into it.
I care for you too much to lose you.
What do you mean?
I guess I...
Well, he's comforting her. I was going to steal a joke from Arrested Development, and he tells her not to cry because she can't spare the moisture.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So then she starts glowing. And it's like none of them notice this glowing?
Yeah, it's...
Like, is it just for
it's
us?
It's just for the audience. It'd been funny if she comes back to normal and she's like, Flash, what were you going to say? And he's like, oh, never mind.
I'm only half torqued now. It's fine.
or he lost the guts to tell her how he feels.
That's probably the last we'll hear about Debra and Flash, I'm pretty sure.
Will they? Won't they? Who knows?
Who cares?
Well, then Toomes comes in and decides to go after Flash. And my immediate reaction was, not again, he just got his plasma back.
But he needs his strength.
Out of my way, girl. I need your boyfriend's youth. His strength.
Spider-Man is able to interrupt Vulture from getting his drain on here.
You didn't say, may I?
So Flash and Debra run out of the Toomes building. And I have to say, I thought this whole time that Toomes was spelt with a B instead of an E. I guess I was wrong.
Until I, you know, sat down to really pay attention and make notes and stuff, I would have sworn it was Toomes with a B, which thought, you know, he's old. So he's like, that's what I thought the illusion was. Like, oh yeah, he's old. He's like basically in a tomb.
But the sign has no misspellings.
Actually, the very last time that they show the sign when they're fleeing the building, it actually does have a misspelling. It says Toomes Aerodynam.
Yep. I guess it's because it's in the background. And it's like when you go and you try to like write something on like a sign or a poster and you just don't give yourself enough space and you have to keep on making the letters smaller.
That transitions them into having a fight again in sort of that big open air area. For whatever reason, Spider-Man is way better at it now. And he very quickly lands one hell of a kick to the chest of fucking Vulture. And it should fucking kill him. That would hurt a lot. Like, he's flying around, he's got his own speed, and just two-footed right in the fucking chest, and down to the ground he goes.
I like it. This is one of my favorite Spider-Man moves.
The two-footer in the back? That's his, like, only move.
So that two-footed kick basically destroys the Vulture for a second, and Spider-Man's kind of won at that point. He's standing over him. I will buy that the Vulture is able to start the bomb.
What did you just do?
I've activated a self-destruct bomb. 60 seconds and this place blows sky high.
Because he just reaches up, it's his chest. Spider-Man doesn't know any better. But then he's able to reach up really quickly and slap another one of those neural neutralizer onto Spider-Man's forehead. Like, how is he slower than this weird mummy? This is so dumb.
How come his spider sense wasn't like, disc, you're gonna get disced?
Vulture's whole thing is to be young again, but he goes and starts the self-destruct thing. Like, doesn't that go against everything that you've been focusing on here?
Yeah, and even if it's not youth that you want, it's definitely these technologies and this company that you've built that you want to control. So blowing up a bunch of your stuff is probably not great either for your long-term goals.
I love how he goes and says that, like, if you let me go, we'll both have a better chance of escaping. Like, those words were chosen pretty carefully.
Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of implication there. Some of the better writing in the episode.
Yep.
But guys, I never thought I would say this. Thank God for Flash Thompson.
Oh my God. He just shows up. He kind of wants to make out, you can tell, but there's no time for that, Flash.
I came back to see how you were doing. You okay? Whoa!
He just sits on his lap and takes like a selfie with him.
He starts taking pictures with him and they just blow up because he spent so much time with him. He'll never let me do this when he's awake.
He wins an arm wrestle against Spider-Man.
A whole series of photos.
Yeah, he's posing him in like pictures like him, like just me and my pal Spidey hanging out. No big deal. Playing chess. I know how to play chess. I'm real smart. It's actually checkers. Like, he's not even...
The unconscious corpse of Spider-Man is still smarter than Flash Thompson.
Yeah, he's busy like putting a Santa hat on him for his Christmas card and they just blow up.
Oh, jeez.
They don't actually blow up. And the bow on this episode has Spider-Man surveying the wreckage, but an errant explosion gives the Vulture his moment to strike. He drains Spidey of his youth and pulls off his mask, revealing a weak and aged Peter Parker.
He's now a silver fox.
Well, yeah.
Still good looking as an old man. Good for him.
He kind of surveys the moment, takes a second, even though all this shit's been happening. We're like, fuck. Fuck, I let Sam Flash Thompson save me. Fuck.
Rescued by Flash Thompson. How embarrassing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was great. Well, I'm not going to leave this one down. So the Vulture goes and unmasks him. He's just like, oh, let's see who's under this mask. But it's like, he's old.
Yeah, you're never going to know who,
like,
it is.
How
that's a good
would
point.
You? Yeah, you won't know who it is unless you're just gonna chill there.
Yeah.
Until he regains his youth. But then what's the fucking point?
It's just for dramatic reveal, because it does make for a really cool stinger, like cliffhanger moment.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's exactly what you said last time, Peter, about Lex Luthor and the Flash. I have no idea who this is. Like, yeah. The chances he knows this person are already like minuscule, and the chances he knows what this person looks like when you fucking aged him 80 years or whatever are even lower. So it's purely for the shot, but it is a great shot. So yeah, you got to cut some slack.
No, for sure. I mean, and that's how the comic ends, right? So
I did like the Vulture's line though.
The night is young and so am I.
You still only have 30 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, his vitality is through the roof. He's probably busting the seam of that crotch.
Well, that's why he wanted to take off Peter's mask, right?
Oh, God. Just teabag him with his newly taught balls.
Gotta, well, you know what? You gotta, when you're young, you do what the young kids do when he just starts teabagging him.
The Vulture's still on the loose, but those loose ends will have to wait another day, because that's it for this episode, which means it's time to web it all up with our arbitrary spider ratings. This is where we rank the episode using whatever idiotic metric we can come up with off the top of our heads. Kevin, go.
All right, I'm going to give this one 5 pieces of purple protective rollerblading gear out of 6. Although it's not without its faults, it's a pretty fun episode, and they seem to have figured out how to have aerial combat happen and make it fun. And there's also some interesting character development. I'd also say that cliffhanger was pretty legit. So, all in all, a good one.
Peter, you're up next.
Okay. I'm going to go and give this one 7 out of 10 minutes of youth. It was good. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the new characters. I enjoyed a new storyline. I enjoyed, you know, learning about the Vulture in my research and seeing how it translated to this, because this to me was the definitive version of the Vulture that I grew up with. So yeah, it was pretty good. And it was good to see that Spider-Man wasn't being so fucking feeble like how he was with the Hobgoblin.
Yeah, I'm basically on the same boat as you guys. I'll give this episode 4 infinitely reflecting lasers out of 5. I really enjoyed a lot of the character interplay with this. We got a bit more in depth with their relationships and where everybody's sort of at in terms of the core group of characters that we've grown to love. And yeah, the action was sweet, and I'm interested to see where it goes from here.
Oh, wow. Well, it sounds like everybody really enjoyed this one. You know, it'd be cool to see what's going to be happening next week, but sadly, only old people really read the news, so I have no idea.
Well, luckily, us millennials get our news on the phone.
Well, excuse me.
He's supposed to have some big scoop.
The moment all America has been waiting for.
Today's issue of the Bugle.
Brock's big scoop.
Eddie Brock's biggest scoop. Big news, too.
That's unbelievable.
Exactly how did you happen to get this?
The Vulture takes Spider-Man's youth to become young again, but he also absorbs the mutating DNA of Man-Spider. And turns out the Scorpion also returns, desperate to become normal again.
Oh, great.
Quit making fun of me.
I just want to be normal again.
I'm excited. Are you excited?
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure that's going to be the last episode of the season.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Ah.
So actually, when this episode drops, it'll be episode 26, which will be 1 year of us doing this show, which is pretty exciting.
And we've already burned through 2 seasons. So, you know.
Yeah.
We stuck with it.
Thanks for sticking with us, folks. We'll be done soon.
Yeah.
No, we're going to be done in 2021.
Really?
Well, the important thing is not only did we stick with it, people stuck with us, and we really appreciate it.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening, and we hope you had a good time. We're everywhere online. All the links are on our website at radioactivespiderpod.com. If you liked the episode, please share it with your friends, family, and reclusive scientific sugar daddies. And if you loved it, consider talking about it on social media, supporting us on Patreon, or rating and reviewing us on your podcast service of choice to help us get the show out there. You might even get some free swag, just like longtime listener Hannah. Thanks, Hannah. We'll be back to you in 2 weeks with our next episode. Until then, this is Radioactive Spider Pod saying, not a lot of laughs, but you'll love the tunes. Keep swinging.
Stay cool, Parker.
Be seeing you, ma'am.
This isn't how we rehearsed it.